Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Friday, and we're packed. Live in Los Angeles, this is The Herd. Wherever you may be, and however you may be listening, we're on Fox Sports Radio and right here on FS1. 1 hour from now, my Blazing Five, I can honestly say, I think they're my strongest five picks I've had since probably middle of last season. 2 weeks in, I feel like I know the league now. My Blazing Five picks in 1 hour. Very excited. Joy Taylor is joining me on a Friday. Joy, we looks like a Miami Heat Laker final is very close.
I don't want to get ahead of myself. We got to finish it out. We've seen a lot of upsets, so I'm not going to say any predictions. Let's just close this out tonight, guys. Let's get it done.
All right, we're getting very close. Year 17 for LeBron James. That cannot be understated. Remember what Michael Jordan looked like in his final year? Couldn't really jump. Year 17 for LeBron. LeBron says, let me guard the hottest young guard in the NBA. He's 23. He's in his prime. I'm a power forward. I got this. And shuts him down. A, most stars don't want to do that. And B, if you give it to them, they can't do it. This is what I would call the gap, and I've seen it twice in the NBA. When Michael Jordan was at his best, the gap between Jordan and everybody else in the sport, it's the stars, was massive. Magic was the only player that was reasonably close, and Magic could do one thing better than Michael, elevate others. Michael didn't always do that. But even scoring and defense, Magic wasn't close to Michael, getting a bucket or getting a stop. The gap between LeBron and everybody else is now absurd. Let's take recent MVPs. You know, they should be close to LeBron. Giannis can't shoot 3 playoff series wins in the East in 7 years. Harden, one-trick pony, all offense. Westbrook, 3 words, out of control. Anthony Davis, completely irrelevant until he joined LeBron. Like Magic to Michael, Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard have things, elements they can do better. Kevin Durant's just a better shooter, and Kawhi right now at this point in his athletic prime probably better at getting a stop over the course of 8-9 minutes. But it's not close. Kevin Durant isn't the leader and can't stay healthy, and Kawhi doesn't talk and communicate and, frankly, doesn't elevate others. He's just great. This is unbelievable what you see last night. LeBron's now done this twice. He did it against Derrick Rose 9-10 years ago. Remember, Derrick Rose was the hottest thing in the NBA, the hottest guard, the talk of the league. And LeBron James said 9 years ago, I'm 6'9 and a half, 250. I got this. And he handcuffed him for the rest of the series in the fourth quarter. In the fourth quarter, LeBron would say, I got D. Rose. What forward in the history of the league does that? Bird, Duncan, Dr. J. He don't do that. Derrick Rose was the quickest guy in the league. LeBron's like, I got him. And Derrick Rose was awful in the fourth quarter. Last night, LeBron can no longer do it for a quarter. Jamal Murray's on fire. He's exploded. He's the next star guard in the league. Nobody can stop him. And in year 17, LeBron's like, yeah, I got him. And creates enough chaos for Jamal Murray that all the scoring stops. I mean, you got to be kidding me on this. It's just year 17. Never forget this. LeBron's son is closer in age to Jamal Murray than LeBron is. Year 17, year 13, guys quit playing defense in this league. Year 15, they're out of the league. Year 17, LeBron, I got this. I've only seen 5 athletes like this, really, in my life, where I'm not even sure who the number 2 is. Tiger Woods. I think in his prime, the number 2 was Phil Mickelson. I think. But for 10 years, there wasn't a 2. Serena Williams. Who's been the second best women's tennis player? I don't think they exist. Tom Brady. I think it's Peyton Manning, but for most of Peyton's career against Tom, Tom was the clutch, and Peyton couldn't win the big game. Michael Jordan, obviously, and now LeBron. The idea most stars wouldn't want that assignment, to guard somebody that's younger, in their prime, different position, red hot, and ascending as a star. LeBron takes it and then accomplishes it, and talked about it after.
I knew it was winning time, and Jamal had it going. You know, I told my teammates that I had him, and everyone else can kind of stay at bay and stay home. And I was able to get a couple stops, and we was able to rebound the basketball, which is the most important thing.
It's just, I'll call it the gap. I've seen it five times. The gap. Tiger, MJ, Brady, Serena, and LeBron. I'm not sure who number two is. I mean, you going to tell me Giannis is two? AD had a playoff series win in 7 years pre-LeBron. The gap. You get it about once a decade, maybe twice. All right, the game in the NFL that a lot of people will be watching. Dak and the Cowboys go to Seattle, Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. Now, what a lot of teams in the NFL do to beat Russell Wilson, here's sort of the theory. Keep him off the field. Run the football. Keep him off the field. Mike McCarthy says, no. We are not going to do that. We are going to get in a shootout with Seattle. We think we can match up with Seattle offense point for point, touchdown for touchdown.
We want to score as fast as we can, as many times as we can, I mean, you know, as far as the start of the game and throughout the game. But, I mean, when you get down in the fourth quarter, that's, you know, that's part of the game management.
Oh, you want to get in a shootout with Russell Wilson. You know what the Dallas Cowboys offense is? It's a political ad. It doesn't matter if you're a Republican or you're a Democrat, if you're Joe Biden, Trump, Bernie Sanders. It doesn't matter. All political ads are sort of the same. They're very slick. They put in music, and they always make the candidate look the best. But it's really more marketing than it is, you know, truth. The political ads aren't really truthful. It's just promises and hope, and it's slick, and it's clever. Dallas's offense is a political ad. Oh, it's slick. It gets a lot of stats. We all think it's good, but let's be honest about it. They either score too early or never enough late. Let's go to last year. Go look at last year's schedule. And you look at a lot of those points, but let's go to three games in particular to start. Green Bay, Buffalo, and Chicago. Those games weren't close. Green Bay led 31-3. Buffalo led 26-7. Bears led 31-14 in the fourth. Those games were never competitive. When you needed Dallas's offense, it was nowhere to be found. They got all their points in those games in garbage times when the games were out of reach. Let's go to three other games against very good teams. At the Saints, at the Patriots, at the Eagles. In those games, the defense, the much maligned Cowboy defense, was actually excellent. But they couldn't muster a second touchdown drive against the Saints. They couldn't muster a single touchdown drive at Foxborough. And they couldn't muster a single touchdown drive at Philadelphia. So in three of their games, it was just a bunch of garbage points where they couldn't get into a shootout. The other team was like, we're going to score on you. They couldn't. And in three other games, when the defense played great against good teams, playoff teams, nothing. Six other biggest games last year. This is a hollow political ad on offense. They're an 8-8 football team that beat one playoff team last year. And again, this year, I see the exact same thing. I'll give you an example. So against the Rams, oh, it came down to the final play. They had six drives in the second half. Result, against Sean McVay, one field goal. And then Atlanta, they're down by 15 with 5 minutes left. Atlanta's in a prevent. They get all their points, and then they recover the goofiest, silliest, craziest onside kick of all time, or they'd be 0-2. Again, in these games, against the Rams, who were moving the ball, just like last year in those three games, against Buffalo, Chicago, Green Bay, when you had to really ramp it up, they couldn't match them in the second half. And then like those three other games where, you know, you fall behind and you need real stuff, and you just couldn't deliver. Rams in Atlanta is the Cowboys last year. When you really need them, it's either too early or too late, and it's just a slick political ad. A lot more marketing than the truth. The way to beat Seattle is not to get in a shootout. The way to beat Seattle is keep Russell Wilson on the sideline. That's what Cam almost did. That's what Cam did last weekend. Where was Russell Wilson at the end of the game last week? Watching on the screen as Cam slowly and methodically kept Russell Wilson off the field. As a Patriot fan, would you have felt better if Russell had the ball with 5 minutes left? No. You felt good because Cam had the ball and Cam was moving and Russell was on the sidelines. That is the way to beat the Seahawks and Russell Wilson. All right, so coming up next, I think we all have to be, and this is going to be incredibly uncomfortable and make everybody furious, but I whiffed on something. I totally whiffed on something in the NFL. And it's just something that we're going to have to be honest about. It's here again, and all of you hate it, but it's a reality about the NFL. And I saw the Dolphins play the Jags last night, and I didn't think about the Dolphins and the Jags. I thought about the NFL's villain, and they're way better than we think. We'll talk about that coming up, plus Blazing 5 in 50 minutes.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Raycon's got new wireless earbuds. I listen to them with my podcast. E25s, 6 hours of playtime, more bass. Get 15% off by Raycon.com/Herd. 15% off. They're great. Discreet. Can't see them. So I'm watching Miami and Jacksonville play last night, and I'm not really thinking about Miami and Jacksonville by the end of it. I'm thinking, oh, my God, New England's way better than I thought. I completely whiffed on New England. 8 opt-outs, lost several key free agents, didn't replace them. Brady leaves. New England's way better than I thought. The Miami Dolphins just destroyed Jacksonville, a competent team, through the first 2 weeks. Destroyed them. The Buffalo Bills have the best defense in the league from the beginning of last year until last week. New England and Buffalo have allowed the fewest yards. Ryan Fitzpatrick against Buffalo and against Jacksonville marched up and down the field. 4 touchdowns, no picks, completion percentage 73%, passer rating over 113. Against New England, he could not move the chains. No touchdowns, 3 picks, a passer rating of 44, 85 yards rushing. They got dominated in time of possession, couldn't run, couldn't convert third downs, and had 260 total yards. I watched that Miami-New England game. Miami couldn't compete. It was over at the end of the first quarter. They moved the ball up and down the field against Buffalo's defense. They moved the ball all over the field and dominated Jacksonville. And New England is a touchdown favorite at home this week to a Raider team that just backhanded the Saints, who everybody has as a Super Bowl team out of the NFC. I have apparently made an egregious mistake on the New England Patriots. I know I'm a homer and stuff, but I'm watching Miami last night, and I watched Miami last weekend. They moved the ball against everybody, up and down the field, and we liked Miami at the end of last year. They couldn't even compete against New England. New England goes on the road and comes within 2 yards in Seattle, cross-country flight, of beating what many believe is the second-best team in the league, the Seahawks. This play, that's, 2 yards, and they beat Seattle. They're favored by a touchdown over the Raiders. They annihilate a Miami Dolphins team that gave Buffalo everything and destroyed Jacksonville. That's what I saw last night. I saw Cam, I saw Belichick, I saw New England, and thought, I'm betting the Patriots this week. Top of the hour, Blazing 5. Here's Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news!
This is the Herdline News.
The final Power 5 conference has announced its plan to start the 2020 football season.
Oh, Pac-12. Oh, okay. Courage. Picture of courage. Okay, wait.
The Pac-12 will play this fall with a 7-game season beginning November 6th. The plan includes daily testing and cardiac monitoring for anybody who does test positive. Those heart issues were a big concern for a lot of programs. Multiple Pac-12 players have announced that they were opting out of the season. So now they'll have to apply for reinstatement from the NCAA if they wish to opt back in. NCAA bylaw rules players ineligible, whether their agreement to be represented by an agent is oral or written, and obviously prohibits them from receiving benefits like gifts, cash, loans, etc., from that agent.
If we have a COVID outbreak, a slight COVID outbreak, which conference will bail first?
Well, I mean, this is what the daily testing is aiming to prevent. Yeah. Like, this is why those conferences were not. And look, as we know, everything comes down to money.
Yeah.
Testing costs money.
Right.
That's why we didn't have testing in the whole country for a long time. That and access to tests, right?
Right.
So it's not like free.
That's what's doing it for the NFL. They can test every player every day.
And MLB and NHL. These leagues have money, so they can provide testing every single day and provide the facilities and the medical personnel to do that. Colleges are a different world altogether. Yeah. Not only, that's not to say that college football doesn't make money, but every school doesn't have the same access to money. Every conference doesn't make the same amount of money.
The bottom of most Power 5 conferences are like basketball schools or like Kansas. They don't even make any money with their football program.
Right.
So yeah, Ohio State and Kansas may play the same sport. Totally different business. Yeah,
exactly. And that's what people will have to keep in mind. Like, the daily testing is very important. It's a big reason why all of these leagues have been able to start up. Now, obviously, the NBA is in a bubble, so that's a different situation. They're able to quarantine people and, for the most part, prevent any kind of access to the outside world. But if you're not in a bubble, daily testing prevents the outbreaks. Now, we've obviously still had games canceled. Like, college is a different world altogether than MLB or the NFL that aren't in bubbles. But the daily testing is important. I hope the NCAA doesn't prevent any players who opted out from coming back, even if they received benefits. Like, this is an unprecedented situation.
That's right.
Let's not make it more complicated by arguing over money.
Yeah.
Please let the kids play if they want to come back. So the Browns have been one of the strongest rushing attacks in the NFL with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt on the roster. So where's that leave Odell? Odell says he understands that with a run-focused offense, this might not be one of his better statistical years.
Yeah. One of my biggest growths has come in acceptance, in a sense. And for me, knowing it's probably not going to be that kind of season. Our team is very, very, very good at running the football, so you have to play to your strength. And then I think you learn where you fit in and where you're able to make your plays and how you can help the team.
Well, he's always said he's about winning. And when he says that, it's about winning. What he's saying is, this was kind of the opposite of some other receivers that have driven me nuts. OBJ is saying, listen, we're a run team and I'm going to be rarely used. And it's like, okay, then he gets. See, this is the difference. Cam and OBJ have both illustrated, I understand this. I have self-awareness here. There's been other great players in basketball in the NFL that they don't understand how good the structure is, or they don't understand what the team is. OBJ has always said, I'm about winning. His comments there tell you he's about winning.
I love what he's saying, and Odell has completely bought into the situation in Cleveland from the very beginning. As we've spoken about many times, this wasn't Odell's choice of places to go.
No, he didn't want. This wasn't his first choice.
No, but he's bought in. He's supported the team. He's backed the team. He's said all the right things, and he's saying the right thing there. For the rest of us, though, that's not really good news. But we knew this.
Right.
We knew before the season started that Cleveland wasn't going to be a team outside of the running game that was going to have big statistical numbers. There's too many weapons.
Well, and the other thing is, your team is always going to be elevated or limited by your quarterback's talent.
Right.
Baker's not somebody right now I want throwing 47 times a game. He's not. Baker throwing 26 times a game on play action with a good running game, I'm totally comfortable with. It would be different if Odell was with a quarterback. I trust Jared Goff to throw 40 times in McVay's system. I do trust him. I don't trust Carson Wentz this morning right now to throw 42 times with that offensive line. So in the current infrastructure of Cleveland with Baker and with that team, 26 throws is about what everybody in that organization is probably comfortable with. And that means if he gets four with all those weapons, that's what he gets.
Yeah. His last two seasons with the Giants, obviously, his numbers were completely different than have been in Cleveland. But there's a lot of factors that play into that as well. And nothing is ever as simple as it's just Baker and Odell can't get on the same page. I do think that's a factor, but they've had three different head coaches. Baker is limited. Whether he's a starting quarterback or not does not mean that he's not limited, as you said. And you have to play to your strengths if you want to win. Odell wants to win, so he's buying in. I would like to see Odell somewhere where he can thrive and be what Odell is best at, but it's just that's not happening right now. So the Patriots made a nice comeback last weekend against the Seahawks, but came short of pulling off the win. And as they look ahead towards the 2-0 Raiders on Sunday, Cam Newton is not settling for almost.
There's no moral victories. I mean, what did people expect? Like, honestly, like, what did you expect? So we expect to compete to win, not just to compete in each and every game. You know, we're coached that way. We practice that way. We attack each day that way. So, yeah, you know, are people ticked off around here? Absolutely.
By the way, is Cam looks thinner. Is it me? His face?
I think it's probably just the camera angle.
Okay.
Yeah. Because he looks like he
looks healthy.
Yeah.
Which he hasn't in three
years.
Well,
I mean, he's been training like crazy, as he's shown.
Yeah.
He's right. I mean, this is... I am not a big moral victory person in general. But I did kind of feel like that was a moral victory last week.
Oh,
now, that doesn't matter to Cam or Belichick or the Patriots, which is right.
Just on the growth of Cam and Edelman and Cam and N'Keal Harry, I thought it felt like a huge win.
And he lost to the Seahawks in the last play. I mean, again, that's not an consolation to Cam, as he's saying, and he's saying the right thing, and he's right. They're playing to win the game, not just be in it at the end. That's not the type of organization that they are, and not the kind of way that Cam's constructed. But I walked away from that game thinking that not only is this working, they're competing, and it's in Cam's hands at the very end of the game against Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. I don't know that I would have predicted that happening before the season started. So, moral victory for us, I guess, but not for the Patriots.
Good stuff, Joy, with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
Chris Broussard, he's our Fox Sports NBA analyst. Interested to talk to him after what we witnessed last night and what we're going to witness tonight. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. All right, Chris. LeBron, he did it 9 years ago with Derrick Rose. He did it last night. He said, okay, that's the hottest guard in the league. I got this. I was kind of blown away by it. The fact that he wouldn't even want the assignment. What did you make of that?
No, it was incredible. And look, Kawhi Leonard, we all know at this stage, we'd say he's a better defender than LeBron. But he didn't do this. He couldn't do this. Even when he ended up taking Jamal Murray and Luka Doncic. I mean, at times he was okay. But he didn't shut him down like LeBron did. Giannis, we know, didn't do it with Jimmy Butler in their series. And so it was incredibly impressive. And there was one play in particular. It was about 3 minutes, 50 seconds left. And LeBron contested Murray at the rim.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Forced him to miss. I don't know if this, right? And then LeBron sprinted down court, got the pass from Rondo, and hit the layup. Colin, that's a play that a role player makes. You know, a guy that rarely gets touches, that just wants to fit in and contribute and win. And when your superstar, the best player in the world, is doing it, that foreshadows a championship to me. And so LeBron was great. And I'm going to say this too, Colin. I think what I see too more from LeBron in this series at least is him fitting into a system rather than being the system.
Yeah.
Like when Rondo's out there, LeBron's letting him run it and LeBron's doing his thing, or LeBron's running the point and AD's the top scorer. I think that looks good for the Lakers in the future. People have bought into this notion that, oh, this is the last chance for LeBron to win a title. I'm not sure. I think the Lakers win it this year. And then the transition is AD becomes the top guy. LeBron's number two, but he's still a top five, top 10 player in the world. And if they build around them wisely, their championship window is still another 2, maybe 3 years.
You know, I thought of something, Chris. I hate load management. Okay, I hate it. But I thought about this last night. So Kawhi is not a great chemistry builder. So when he adopts load management, chemistry gets really bad. LeBron is a great chemistry creator. He did it in Miami with other stars. This team with AD, Joy and I have been saying it. Week one, we're like, God, the chemistry is unbelievable between Vogel and the staff. I know I hate load management, but I watched LeBron in this bubble, and you know what I see, Chris? I see a guy that got 3 months off on his legs. I see a guy that, because of an injury last year, got 3 months off on his legs. LeBron has not looked this fresh in 5 years. He has more energy than these kids. And I thought to myself, LeBron doesn't have to worry about chemistry because he's a magician at it. He may want to adopt load management. LeBron may want to just say, I'm playing 60 games next year, and I honestly hate it. But if this is the energy I get, I got to tell you, Chris, I haven't seen LeBron play like this on both ends in 5-6 years.
Well, and I think the way LeBron would load manage would be during games. Like, he would play his 35, 34 minutes, whatever it is, but, you know, pace himself during the game. And I don't think, Colin, you're going to see him play this type of defense in the regular season. Maybe at the end of a tight game, if they're in a battle with the Clippers, as we saw in the first game of the bubble when he guarded Kawhi. But I think he would save this type of stuff for the playoffs. And to be honest, rightly so. So I think he's going to continue to play his 70-ish or 70-some-odd games. But I think he'll pace himself. To me, a nice line, Colin, for next year is LeBron averaging 22, maybe 23 points, 10 or 11 assists, and 7 rebounds, and letting AD be the leading scorer by a good couple of points. But that's good for the Lakers. And I think they, like I said, their championship window will not shut after October 12th or whatever the last day of the finals is.
Chris Broussard joining us. Okay, tonight, Miami can close it out, beat the Celtics, and get to the finals. I'm going to say something. This is blasphemy. Nobody wants to hear this, especially in Miami. But even though it's 3-1 Heat, I watched this series, and a lot, I think, Boston's got more good players. Boston's a better team. And then they're down 3-1. And I know you're not supposed to say that, but I've watched this the other night. Right. Jason Tatum doesn't score in the first half. The Tyler Hero plays the greatest game any 20-year-old's ever played, and it's a one-point game late. And I'm like, I still think Boston has a pulse in this series. Do you?
I picked Boston in 7. Look, I do think Miami at this point is going to win. I don't know how many more times we can see a team come back from a 3-1 deficit, you know, this late in the playoffs. But I agree with you. I think Boston has more talent. Jimmy Butler even said himself that they have more talent. But Miami's tenacity and hard-nosed play, I think, is just wearing down the Celtics, which sounds crazy because they got Marcus Smart. They've got high-character guys that don't quit. But they're not bringing it at the level that Miami is. And again, Brad Stevens, very good coach. Eric Spoelstra is looking like all of that. I mean, with the zone defense he's employing, you've never seen an NBA team play zone as much as Miami is, and it's got Boston out of sorts at the right times. So I do think at this point Miami's probably going to win the series. I'll take Boston tonight. And I'm going to say this, Colin, because we all assume the Lakers win the West, and I think the Lakers win the championship. But I think either team in the East will make it a tough series with the Lakers, a 6 or 7 game series. And I think Miami would really make it tough on the Lakers. I think you could put Bam Adebayo on Anthony Davis, and he can make it tough on him. Not going to shut him down. You could put Jimmy Butler on LeBron, and he's going to make it tough on him, spell him with Jay Crowder. And then, obviously, they can go zone at times, and LeBron and AD neither are great shooters. And Miami shoots it well. So I think Miami will make it a surprisingly competitive series, assuming those are the two teams that get there.
Chris Broussard, finally, it is the bubble is different. I mean, we're dealing with a pandemic. It's a bubble. We have seen young players thrive in the bubble, and many veteran players, like the Clippers veterans, struggle, like the Bucks veterans struggle. You have a lot of sources in this league. You talk to a lot of players. What do you make of the bubble and how it's affected some players differently than other players?
Well, what I'm hearing, Colin, is that in the bubble, it's all about ball. And if you, the guys that are excelling are the gym rats, the guys that just want to play. That's all they think about is playing basketball. There are guys in the league, in every endeavor, actually, who love what they do, and then there's guys who like what they do. And you got NBA players who like ball, but what they really love is all that it brings. The fame, the women, the lifestyle, the money, all of that. And there's none of that in the bubble. It is just about playing ball. Even the guys that get charged up by the crowd, this is different. So this is like a lot of times when NBA players play in the summers at UCLA or in Houston or Atlanta, wherever they may be, you would go there, Colin, see some big names, see some so-so names, and some of the mediocre guys are getting off. And you're like, why is this guy balling like this against these all-stars? It's because they just love to ball, and they're not worried about all the ancillary stuff that some of the other guys are worried about. So the Clippers, great example. I was hearing leading up to the bubble that a lot of their guys really weren't that excited about going to the bubble, whether it was coronavirus, whether it was the Black Lives Matter, or whatever the situation. But we know Lou Williams was hesitant to go, and it led me to almost pick against them. I still stuck with them, but I thought about going against them because, like, if they aren't really all in, then I don't know that they're going to be able to win it. And obviously, you saw they underachieved,
yeah,
because when push came to shove, they weren't all in like some of these other guys. And these young guys, a lot of them just want to ball. They don't have families. They don't have other concerns. A lot of them don't have kids. So they just about ball, and they're fine in the bubble because it's all basketball.
Chris Broussard, Heat Celtics tonight. Miami tries to wrap it up. Good seeing you, bud.
All right, Colin.
All right, top of the hour. Blazing five. I think it's my best pick since the middle of last season. And I'm taking some favorites this weekend. We're starting to see a trend. Favorites are covering. Some favorites I like this weekend. Coming up next, Greg Cosell yesterday said something I've never heard him say about a great player in the NFL. And also, you didn't like my backward hat rant, did you? I will double down on it. Coming up next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
CarShield.com. The code is HERD. CarShield.com. America's number one auto protection provider. CarShield.com. It is great to have you in. Top of next hour, blazing five picks. I love my picks. All of our odds always provided by FoxBet. So, this is often what happens with really, really all-time greats, is that they do something you can't teach. They do something. The word I would use is innate. It's just in them. Like, you couldn't explain Michael Jordan and Tom Brady's obsessiveness. Where does it come from? They have great families. You know, why are they so obsessed? They're like, Michael Jordan is still, he's been out of the sport for 15 years. He's still poking everybody in the ribs. You can't explain it. It's just, it's Michael. It's innate. You can't explain that Tom Brady, who has a Super Bowl trophy wing in his house, still has a chip on his shoulder. Peyton Manning had a trait where his feet, he tapped his feet a lot. That's usually a bad sign. That's a sign like, oh, he's got nervous feet, nervous quarterback. Peyton made it work. Aaron Rodgers holds the ball too damn long his entire career. He's Aaron Rodgers. He makes it work. Greg Cosell talked about the greatness of Russell Wilson, that he does something all his years, 41 years NFL films watching quarterbacks, he does something he's never seen but makes it work.
He has the ability, when there's pass rush pressure, to drop his eyes, look at the rush, which you would never teach anybody to do, then refocus his eyes downfield and still make throws at the intermediate and deeper levels. I can't recall in all my years doing this, seeing anybody do that. And I think that makes Russell Wilson incredibly special.
Speaking of Russell Wilson, there is a picture out there where he has his hat on backwards. It's in a practice uniform, and he probably just walked out of the locker room, and he's got a hat on backwards, probably a walk-through before a game, and everybody's like, oh, Colin, Russell Wilson's got his hat on backwards. You can wear your hat on backwards. Yesterday, at the very end of my show, I talked about wearing your hat on backwards. And fans ripped me. It was very hurtful. I did not sleep last night. Barely closed my eyes. It was very painful. But I'm going to double down on something I've always believed. And when I saw Carson Wentz with his hat on backwards after another bad performance and bad loss, standing in front of the proud Eagles, banner, I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. Let me just ask you something. Because I believe in life, time and place and location and assignment matter. There are certain things you just wouldn't wear if you were introduced to the Pope or the President. Time, place, location, assignment matters. If you want to wear a hat on backwards, in your garage, in your yard, if you want to wear it at the beach, at the gym, in your car, I don't care. Never really care. In fact, joy is my witness, I don't care if you ever wear it backwards as a baseball player, as a basketball player. I mean, baseball players wear hats all the time. What do I care? I don't even care if you wear it backwards as a linebacker in football, a cornerback, a receiver, a tight end, an offensive lineman. I don't care. I don't care. But if you are a quarterback and you have your once a week podium discussion and the organization and the Philadelphia Eagles are brilliantly owned, respectfully built, smartly designed, and you have the Eagles banner behind you with a major corporate sponsor, Toyota, behind you, and you're telling me this for a $5 billion face of the franchise is no different than this, I think you're wrong. I'll totally double down. Let me speak slowly. Time matters. Location matters. Assignment. Let me give you a person. I don't know him. He's very popular on the interweb. His name is Dave Portnoy. He created Barstool Sports. He's very edgy. Can be very, very funny. He's very talented. Barstool Sports attacked me yesterday. Very hurtful. This is, you know, I've got children. You have to be nicer to me. They just ravaged me yesterday. So Dave Portnoy is this very raw, you know, Hawaiian shirts, sometimes no shirts, authentic, in your face. I don't care about anybody. And it's very effective. But it is interesting that a month ago he interviewed the president and he wore a suit and he was a real professional. And he was respectful, and he didn't swear. It's almost as if, kids, assignment matters, location matters, time matters. Most of you won't be as successful as Carson Wentz or Dave, so maybe you just don't get it. But when you stand in front as the face of the franchise, don't care if you're Ken Griffey, you're a baseball player, what do I care? I don't care if you're a hockey guy. I don't care if you're in your yard, your gym, a bar, on a date. I don't care if you wear your hat on backwards. I don't care. I've worn it in my garage. I've worn it in my yard. But on that weekly podium, you are standing in front of the logo, a major spot. Do you know how much you have to pay as a sponsor to get Dak in front of that logo on Tuesday? They have a casino in Dallas. They pay millions of dollars. Do you know how much Toyota pays to get that logo, that sponsorship? It's not about wearing the hat. It's about the symbolism and the respect. It's why Dave wore a suit at the White House. Because assignment matters. It's the president. Like him or not, it's the president. Time, location, situation, place. You don't wear a hat on backwards meeting the Pope. You don't interviewing the president. And I believe you don't, as a franchise quarterback, in that weekly press conference, especially after a loss in which you were awful. Because I'm already questioning your judgment. You want to look like a frat boy? Go for it. Go for it. It's not me. It's not my football team. Bengals beat you this weekend 0-3. Wear two hats backwards. What do I care? I'm just thinking. You're not going to pressure me into believing that time, place, assignment, location don't matter. Hell yes, they matter. You meet with your boss, it's different than meeting with the intern. You meet with the president, it's different than meeting with a local lobbyist. And you stand at that podium as a quarterback, 0-2, logo, advertisers. You're trying to send a message. Remember Tom Brady in New England used to do the Monday radio show in Boston? Do you remember that? He didn't do it for money. Tom Brady never did that for money. Why did Tom Brady do the morning press conference for years in Boston radio? Got paid, probably got paid $1,000 a hit, $2,000. The guy's worth $700 million. He did it to spread the message for the week. That he and Belichick arrive at a message, and he is spreading the message for the week. If they lost, optimistic. If they won, we've got a lot to work on. It was symbolic. It was irrelevant. He didn't need the money. He did it for symbolism as the face of the franchise. This is the message Bill and I want going forward. I'm doubling down on that hat thing. Wear it in your garage. Just not as a franchise quarterback at the podium. Blazing 5 next.